With the Legislative Energy Commission to order. I apologize for the delay. It was mostly unavoidable. Sorry about that. We have basically two parts to the agenda today, establishing some rules and goals for the commission and also presentation from the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota about their Destination 2025 report, which I think members have not had any experience with that to this point, we'll find very interesting. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from March 25th and June 11th. I think members have those before them. Chair would entertain a motion for the approval.
Mr. Chair, I move approval.
Senator Prettner-Solin moves approval of the minutes previously described. Is there any discussion, any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor of their approval, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Part of the discussion that took place prior to the meeting with the Senate co-chair was the question of the proposed rules. I had sent out a proposal that hopefully all members received by email last week, and we have distributed also a proposal from the Senate. And Senator Solin, perhaps you would like to address the concerns that you had with the original proposal that resulted in your diversion from the Senate that we have before us. That would be the document that is coded JCF0032.
Mr. Chair, I think mostly I just wanted to put it in more of an affirmative rather than a negative context, and so some of it was more in terms of making it a proponent of what we would do rather than things that would limit what we could do. I did have some concerns about I did have concerns about the 60-day rotation of the chairs. I understand what Chair Hilty is trying to accomplish in that he wants to make sure that we're an active council, that we are active commission, that we will meet regularly. But I think we can do that by making a decision that we will meet on a monthly basis on a defined day each month. And rather than limiting it by saying that if it isn't held in 60 days, then the gavel will fall to the to the next chair in the other body. The reason for this, I think, is I think we're all on the same page. We're working together. But I think it could be a very if we had a dysfunctional commission and they were game playing, that it's quite possible that one body would decide not to meet, and then unless they held the gavel, and I would just be concerned that we'd fall into that type of a process. I don't think that in the foreseeable future that's a problem, but I think that in the reorganization from the LAETF to the LEC that we've really been working in a way that indicates that we want to be an active commission and that we want to set out goals that we're going to be moving toward, and so I don't see that it's a problem that we're going to be meeting on a regular basis. So I wanted to eliminate that part also. Other than that, I think it's a lot of this is just pure semantics.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is just to that point. You mentioned something about regular meetings, yet I don't know that I see that addressed in your rules.
Well,
to set up, is there a
Senator Brettner-Sola.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, I guess that is true. It isn't set up in our rules. It is set up in a document that Representative Hilty has put forward that in which he sets up regular meetings and something that we've talked about.
I mean, Mr. Chair and Senator Solon, I guess my comments would be why not either do both, or I think both bodies were aware that that was a new rule this year for conference committees, and frankly, I think it worked quite well. And it's something I would advocate continuing on because we were able to continue with conference committees on a regular basis. And when we didn't, we knew that we lost our gavel. And I thought it worked quite well as a new rule in the legislature this year. So as I read these rules, I guess I kind of like the idea of rotating the gavel on a day certain or putting both in. If, like you mentioned, that we're going to be a regular meeting commission, then put in the 30 days in here in your rules that we will meet every 30 days, and if we don't, then every 60 days the gavel rotates. That's an either or at that point.
Senator Brettner-Sola.
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, I think there are certain circumstances, probably around the Christmas holidays, in which that may be a problem. We may meet in November and then decide that over the holidays it would be difficult to meet. And so by the time we get to January, it's 62 days, and I'm afraid then that it would be an unnecessary rotation of the gavel. I'm not sure either that we really want to put into our bylaws that we have to meet. I think that might be too confiding. I think it should be a practice, and I think it should be the intention of the commission. I'm not sure we really want to put it into our bylaws.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I certainly understand that, I think, the different points of view here, and maybe this would complicate it more, but I think the intention is to make sure that we keep moving and have regular activity. I think it would make a little bit more sense to say that the chair, whoever has the gavel, would schedule a meeting. It wouldn't necessarily have to occur within 60 days, but the whoever has the chair should at least call a meeting sometime in order to, that might be a compromise that if they don't call a meeting, whenever, it could be scheduled up more than 60 days away, you know, but if they don't schedule a meeting, then they would lose the gavel and let the next chair have a chance to schedule one. But it doesn't necessarily trigger that we have to meet at a certain time. Or we could just say the chair shall schedule regular meetings while they hold the gavel and just be loose.
Senator Brettner-Sola?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I just think that if we are meeting regularly, we're about to have those discussions at each meeting anyways. I think that we need to preserve some flexibility. I certainly understand we want to be a working commission. I think everybody here is intent on that, but I'm afraid that we limit ourselves too much. I mean, there may be some days where half of us can't meet, and I think that becomes a problem then.
Senator Dill?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, the way I would look at it, we should maintain a maximum flexibility, and I don't like meeting unless there's a good reason to meet. Plus, we're short of money, and if we meet every single month, it's going to cost more money. So let's meet and get our work done, but let's try to be as efficient as possible. Now, we sat around here for half an hour trying to get started today, if we lost some time. So I would say we should do more at each meeting and have flexibility built into the system so there's freedom and so you can make adjustments like Senator Solon said about the Christmas holidays and so forth.
For old kid.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dill.
Now I see two proposed rules in here. This one is dated 11/48 this morning. Is this the one that we're supposed to be considering? That's the revised one?
Senator, the one that you're referring to is the one that was brought to us by the Senate. The one that the proposed rule says my name on it was sent out last week, and we're sort of discussing the differences between those two proposals at this point, and I think that the main difference really is what we've been discussing, which is the question of the rotation of the gavel. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question I have is the number five with the budget and expenses, and I note there's a little bit of difference here where the Senate proposal is that the Commission shall have an annual budget. And Mr. Chairman, and maybe Senator Pretner Solon could explain this too. How do you each envision the budget working? I see both recommendations are that the expenditures require authorization of the co-chairs, but just how would we envision that working? Will we set a budget with budget parameters and segments, and then the co-chairs authorize the expenses under those parameters, or how do you envision this actually working?
Representative Magnus, our statutory authorization provides for an assessment on various energy providers in the state of up to $250,000 per year. And I guess my assumption was that we would be formulating an annual budget based on, you know, that as the upper limit to what we would have available to include in the budget. Wouldn't necessarily include an assessment for that amount if we felt that it was possible to do what we wanted to do for less than that. But it is an annual, it's provision for an annual assessment, and I presume that it implies that we would do an annual budget as well. I think it should be on an annual basis. I don't think we would want to do a six-month budget or anything like that. Representative Westrom?
Could you, just to that point then, so we would likely accept the Senate language for an annual budget then, and how about the expenditures again? What expenditures would the co-chairs authorize other than what the full commission would authorize? So the full commission would authorize a budget, and then the co-chairs would say, well, we'll pay these as basically operating or under the budget parameters. That's a bit where I'm confused.
Well, I think that what is contemplated here is the kind of thing, I mean, everyone has before them right now sheet for reimbursement for travel expenses and per diem for this meeting, and the LCC rules are such that the co-chairs are required to sign off on that before that can be paid. And I think that's just what we're assuming, is that before any expenditure would actually be paid for, it would have to be signed off on. And that's pretty typical, I think, of any organization. Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, just clarifying where we're at with Senator Prittner-Solon's comments. Was there a, did she make a motion to accept one or the other? We're just having discussion on the meeting and the rotating of meetings in 60 days. Could you clarify? And as I understand it, she's deleting the last.
Well, we do not at this point, Representative Westrom, have a motion before us, although I think one might be contemplated. Representative Beard?
Mr. Chair, thank you. While we're just talking about proposed rules here, I want to go back to the budget in Section 5 again. So they appear to be relatively close, but maybe Mr. Eliff can remind us where our revenue comes from and how that's triggered. And the reason I'm asking is for clarification is I remember how it worked under the old Electrical Energy Task Force. But it, are we extending that appropriation to other energy producers, gas, petroleum, coal, biomass, solar, and so on and so forth? Who levies it? Who collects it? And if we approve a budget, does that mean that we're setting it? That's the gist of my question, where I'd like to go. But I think maybe it's great to take the opportunity to just refresh our memories on where our money comes from and how we actually levy it, appropriate it.
Mr. Ela?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm refreshing my memory as well. I'm looking at the legislation under which the Commission operates, and the assessment, in contrast to the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force, which was strictly on electricity producers, includes electricity producers, but it also includes bulk terminals located in the state from which petroleum products and liquids are dispensed, as well as utilities providing natural gas services. Okay. To Minnesotans. So it's been broadened considerably.
Mr. Chair, so if we set a budget here July 1st to June 30th, is that the number then that someone will be required to collect from these companies? And do we have a proration formula built into that legislation as well?
Mr. Ela?
We left the apportionment of the assessment to the Commissioner of Commerce because they have all the information on exactly how much sales were made by each of those different sectors which are assessed. There is a process. We'd adopt the budget, and then I assume either probably at that same meeting we would make an assessment to raise the revenues for that budget, and then that would go for their approval.
So, Mr. Chair, this will be a little different than what we had in the past. I think before it was just a blanket assessment of, I think it was 200,000 power companies, and that went to the somehow through mechanism, Legislative Coordinating Commission, I believe, that came here that we could expend. I see Mr. Fuller's looking puzzled, like I don't even know where I'm going with the question. I'll stop looking at you then, John.
I'll stop looking puzzled.
Okay. But I just wanted to be clear. Right now it's a little murky as to how this money is collected and just what our power is to actually set the levy and then the mechanism for which it's collected. Apparently it's done through the Department of Commerce. That seems clear. Is it then, Mr. Chairman, up to us to determine whether it's $100 or $100,000 or something to that effect? Is that our call?
Yep. Representative Beard, I believe that is the case. The authority and the amount has not changed. It was $250,000 for the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force. Mm-hmm. It's $250,000 for the commission, and I believe it says up to $250,000. Yeah. And it's not subject to approval by the LIC.
It's just collected and goes to Commerce, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that's helpful for us to know. Thanks.
So, Mr. Chair?
Senator Prittner-Solon.
I move approval of the proposed rules for the LEC, document JCF0032.
We have that motion before us. Is there further discussion to the motion? Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, I don't have the Senate proposal. Is there any other changes in that one versus beside the rotating committee language?
Representative Western, I think not. The language is somewhat different, but I believe that it means pretty much the same thing in the other four sections of the, or five sections of the proposal.
The one particular question, and I can talk to our staff here, but the budget process of being approved is subject to the commissioner setting the budget and not just the co-chairs. Is that similar?
That is, yes.
Okay.
Well,
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Western.
One other question, and it wasn't in the House proposal either. Early in June, there was language about negotiating contracts, and some of us had raised concerns about that. It's not in either proposal presently. Is that an issue that's just been set aside? It may not happen, or who's going to be responsible for the negotiating of contracts that could create liabilities for the commission and affect our budgets? Has that been discussed?
Representative Westrom, it has not, although there is a proposal that we'll take up shortly dealing with the question of hiring staff, and I think it would be appropriate to discuss that at that time. I think there is an implication in the way that proposal is drafted regarding that.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, Senator, I think that probably there is agreement pretty generally on all of the parts of the Senate proposal for rules, with the exception of the rotation of the gavel. And I guess I would move to amend your motion to include that provision from the House rules. So basically, it would just be amending the House language beginning on line 12 of the House proposal, lines 12 through 16. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. 12 through 14. No, I was wanting to include the 60-day provision.
So that one sentence?
Yes. that one sentence, beginning on line 12 and ending on line 14.
He wants the 60 days. Oh, we already have the one half about show rotators.
Yeah, I realize. Since part of that sentence would be, is already included, I think we would just delete that or modify the sentence. Mr. Eliff, if you want to, I think if you understand what I'm proposing here, maybe you could just tell us how that would read. So we do have the staff.
If I do understand the chair, I think the motion is to, on line 1.12 of the Senate proposed rules, after the word commission, insert comma, or if the commission has not held a regular meeting for 60 days.
Correct. So that would be the amended motion, or the motion to amend. Senator Anderson.
I just would like to ask what's the intention of both of the chairs in terms of how often we should meet, because that's pretty much good enough for me to know if there is a plan, but if there's a stark difference between the two chairs, I guess I need to know that too.
Well, Senator Prettner-Solon will have to address this also, but I believe my understanding is pretty clear that we agree that we should attempt to meet at least once a month, year-round, in order to do the work of the commission. And that we will certainly do everything we can in order to maintain that schedule, recognizing that sometimes it's not possible. And frankly, I think between the two of us, we would not necessarily, if some circumstances that we had not foreseen arose, we would not really quibble about, you know, the 60-day rule either. The reason that I thought that that was important, and I think at least some other members do, is that it's possible to envision circumstances down the road that would be quite different than the ones that we have currently. I don't think this is a proposal about how things work in the foreseeable future. But we have seen situations in the past when there would be an issue if we didn't have a rule like this, then that's my reason for feeling that it's important. Senator Prettner-Solon.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Anderson, I agree. I agree that we should meet on a monthly basis, and I think that there may be occasional months when we cannot meet. And especially maybe when we're all up for election next year, it may be difficult to meet throughout the interim on a monthly basis, too. But again, I have problems with the language about if the commission has not held a regular meeting for 60 days. And what happens then if it's 90 days or 120 days? Does it keep rotating, or does it just rotate that once and then stay with that person for until the next meeting is held? I just don't think it's real clear, and I think the language is problematic.
Well, Senator, it would certainly be my intention that that would continue. I mean, if I guess if neither of the co-chairs had any intention of calling a meeting, it just wouldn't happen, you know. So yeah, I would read that to say that, you know, if the gavel rotated because of no activity, and then there was still no activity for the next 60 days, it would go back again to the person that didn't do anything in the first 60 days. But,
Mr. Chair.
I have a moot point.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dill.
Mr. Chair, members, time is ticking away here, and I don't think it's a big deal one way or the other. I think we should just vote and get on with our business.
I agree.
So let's vote.
Senator Sundrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's probably not a big deal, but maybe it is a little bit. I'm just sitting here thinking, you know, this the idea of a meeting a month, that's fairly noble. But, you know, aren't we just going to be stumbling all over the work of the respective House and Senate Energy Committees? It seems to me we would. It just seems to me that this kind of activity is a good, if you will, off-season or interim activity. And certainly we ought to meet with some regularity there. We ought to look at the higher level issues and into the horizon, so to speak, for where we need to go in energy in Minnesota. But and I have confidence that the chairs will drive that. If you don't drive it, the membership will drive it. We will meet. I just don't believe necessarily we need a rule that says we're going to meet on a prescribed basis. I think we'll meet with some regularity when we ought to meet, and probably to some extent, in my view at least, I don't have a for me a lot of appeal about the idea of meeting during session. It seems to me that we're just going to stumble over the work of the House and Senate committees if we do that. And we shouldn't replicate. We should take that higher view. That's all.
Well, Matt, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dill.
Maybe we should take the Republican approach and just go with total freedom and get rid of these rules altogether and just go by instinct. I mean, just common sense. Let's not worry about it. You both have common sense, and we can call the meetings and when we need them, and let's get on with something here.
Senator, I would reiterate that my proposal has nothing to do with our current membership. That's just trying to establish rules that might be useful in other circumstances. If Representative Westrum.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Sundrum might have made some valuable points. I think during session it could be problematic at times to meet monthly, but I think also in the election years it's easy to foresee a September, October for sure not meeting, and seems quarterly might be more in order some of the times, and so I guess I would prefer not to lock ourselves into 60 days or less in meetings. So I'm thinking the Senate language might be a little more broad in giving us that flexibility. This year might be different than next year. Senate's up for election next year, too, so they might share the perspective that we get every 2 years. But just some thoughts of this would apply to next year as well. And that we all know that changes the dynamics of meetings around here.
For any further discussion, Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it seems to me that the House language doesn't really lock us in. It just it ensures that there will be rotation if one chair chooses not to meet during one of those months. And I think that is, you know, again, it's aimed not towards the foreseeable future here, but for beyond. When there will be different chairs to ensure that one chair can't hold up the meeting of the commission for an indefinite period of time into the future, that there will be an opportunity for the other co-chair to call a meeting if they so choose. But it seems to me that there's still a lot of flexibility in the House language. If neither chair decides that there's a reason to meet, there's no need or requirement that they meet.
Well, seeing no further discussion, we have the motion before us to amend the Senate proposal by adding the words, or if the commission has not held a regular meeting for 60 days. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Chair is going to have to ask for a show of hands. Those in favor of the Motion for the amendment. Please raise your hand. Yes, I am voting. And those opposed? There's, I believe, 7 ayes and 8 nays, so the amendment is not adopted to the original motion. Is there any further discussion? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, just a question here. In many boards that I serve on, there's always a provision for a certain portion of the membership to call for a meeting. If things are stuck in the sand or mud or something has come up. We don't have that provision here that I'm seeing. Now, somebody will probably point it out to me right now, but is there a reason we didn't add that? Something to consider in the future?
I think you're right that there is no such provision in the proposal. Senator Prettner-Solon?
Well, I would just say, Mr. Chair, that it is a provision in some boards, but it's not a common provision.
Okay.
And so it didn't come up as an issue in establishing the rules. Actually, the rules are kind of redundant because a lot of this is already set by statute.
Understood. Well, I just wanted to raise the point. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is not a proposal for the rule. I don't want to change the rules. I'm fine with them. But I just want to make a comment, and that is to ask that or request that regularly scheduled official legislative meetings, that the meetings not be scheduled at the same time if possible. Just as a member of many of those regularly scheduled commissions like the LCCMR and the Lessard-Sams Council, and I think I just want to make that a formal request so that staff just can check those kinds of commissions that are scheduled far in advance, that are our, you know, statutory requirement that we're part of, and it's hard to be in a position where you're appointed to two things that are meeting at the same time. I understand during session that's unavoidable, and sometimes it is unavoidable, but I just want to ask if we could try to avoid that.
Thank you, Senator, and that's something. The reason we're having a meeting today is that staff did a survey of the membership to try to discover some meeting time that everyone would be available for. In fact, I drove down from the North Shore this morning to be here for this meeting, but certainly that's something that we have kept in mind, and we'll certainly try to continue doing that. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Prettner-Solon would renew her motion that the rules proposal JCF 0032 be adopted. All those in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The rules are adopted. I've already lost my agenda. Here it is. So, having the easy part of the agenda out of the way, the next item on the agenda would be the proposal to adopt a work plan for the commission. Senator Prettner-Solon and I have had a discussion about this previous to this meeting, and I think one of the things that we agreed on, Senator, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the very beginning of this proposal says that the legislative Legislative Energy Commission would adopt a work plan for the next 18 months consisting of the following tasks. There is perhaps in the wording of this the implication that this would be that if we adopted this plan, that these would be the exclusive tasks that we could consider, which was not my intention. And also, there's a question about 18 months. The reason that we had that in the proposal is simply that 18 months is the end of all of our terms, and we don't know who's going to be back here to begin work in 2011. But I am not wedded to either of those ideas, so hopefully we can consider what is proposed as a work plan without feeling that it would be exclusive to the things that are listed here. And as far as the time is concerned, if it took a lot longer than that to accomplish what is proposed here, I don't wish to limit the possibilities by sticking with the 18 months. So if we could discuss the plan with that in mind, would entertain any questions or comments. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think this outlines a lot of the things I think we need to be doing. And I don't know if you want questions now, or I have one small suggestion of something I think that could be useful to add. On the bullet point list, I think one of the things we need to be thinking about is cost. So I just suggest possibly adding impacts of potential short and long-term cost drivers. And I intentionally choose the word cost because we often talk about price and rate, how much the rate is. And if you're using less energy at a higher rate, it might have a different cost. And just so I want it to be a broader thinking about what drives cost. But I'm not sure if that's in there. If it is, and you can point it out, that's great. But I think it's something we should have in the energy report as we develop the framework.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. I support Representative Knuth's suggestion. I might ask if you would consider saying including externalities, because cost depends on how you define it. But I had another suggestion or question, and maybe I haven't spent a lot of time reading this. I apologize for that. But is the concept of how do we respond to federal climate legislation and how it affects us as a state, is that incorporated in here somewhere? Because I think that's a really important question for us to be paying attention to.
Well, Senator, the review of the Climate Change Advisory Group actions has something of that implication in it, but I don't think there's anything specifically addressing what you just said.
I think it's important, Mr. Chair, to have that be part of our report to the legislature. Maybe we could slip that in somewhere.
I think one thing that I should mention here about item number 4 in the proposal, that some people that have spoken with about this have kind of missed, and that is that what we're talking about doing is not immediately doing this report. The first sentence says develop a framework for an integrated policy report to the legislature. And if I could say, this kind of addresses the concern that Senator Sundrum expressed just a short while ago. It was certainly my intention and, frankly, in pushing to establish the Energy Commission that we have some body that would consider the big picture without simply duplicating or replicating the work of the committees of the House and Senate. My experience as a committee chair in the House is that there's a very limited opportunity to make those kinds of considerations and do the kinds of research that's necessary to make them when what the committee does basically is just respond to whatever proposal somebody wants to have heard before it. And that results in just dealing with things in a very piecemeal way, in which there isn't any coherent vision. There isn't any necessary consideration of how a specific proposal relates to every other consideration in the whole big energy picture. And that was my concept of what this commission should be doing. Certainly not in any way simply duplicating or in any way interfering with the work of the committees. I think if we want to conceive of the Legislative Energy Commission as simply another committee, we just disband it, because it doesn't make sense to do that. So this proposal was put together with that as kind of a basic philosophy. Senator Anders.
Well, Mr. Chair, I really agree with your purpose and your vision for the commission. I think that's right. And I'm not sure if you're commenting on what I was proposing or just making a general comment. Would you like me to suggest some language here? I was going to maybe say in paragraph 2, because that paragraph is about reviewing studies,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's all that I wanted to suggest, that we need to review federal legislation and regulation. And again, I think, as you said, I don't know that that is something that we can do routinely in the regular legislative session with the regular committees. We can do it occasionally, but we need to really, this group needs to be really kept up to speed, I think. So I would suggest just after review insert relevant federal legislation and regulations or something like that.
I would certainly be amenable to that. If you want to write specific language, I would be happy to incorporate it. And just so that we know what we're doing here, I would, at this point, make this a formal motion that this work plan be adopted with the omission of the language ahead of paragraph of number one, just for discussion purposes. So do we have further discussion? Senator Prettner-Sol.
Chair Hilty, I think my concern was for the flexibility also. And so I'm concerned that this would be too confusing. So I would like some language in here that would say that this would not be limited to just these topics. I also think that the framework for 4 is pretty exhaustive, and I'm not sure we want to put equal attention on each of those areas for a report every time, and that there might be some latitude to be able to focus on what is, I mean, this, of course, is just for 18 months now we're talking about, so it would be although it's setting the framework, is that it? It's setting the framework for future reports. So I think it's important that we focus on what's timely rather than having to give equal treatment to each of these categories. And I would like the availability to add categories or delete them as it becomes important. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things that are missing from here, like... I can't remember what I said before, but...
Well, Senator, as far as the 18 months are concerned, that's just sort of it is a fact that there will be a new legislature in approximately 18 months, and we may or may not be part of it. I'm not at all concerned about timelines there. I would not, as I said, I would not include that as part of the proposal. As far as what is included or not, I don't think there's any implication. I don't think there's any implication in the language that says that these must have equal consideration. It just says that he must be included in a consideration, and I would assume that as this was developed, we would focus on what seemed to obviously the most immediate and most important of these factors. And it's certainly not my intention in making this proposal to limit anything. It's simply my intention to create some kind of focus that we can have going forward. Obviously, as with any legislative body, at any time, anything that we have set in place can be amended and changed. And I'm not trying to say that we should do something here that would not be subject to that. I mean, if we adopt a work plan today and have a meeting in September, and Senator Dahl comes in and says, you know, I've thought about this, and items 3 and 4 don't make any sense, and I propose that we eliminate them and put my language in instead, we could certainly do that. I'm not trying to say this is what we absolutely have to do. I'm trying to say if we don't set ourselves some direction at this point, we won't know where we're going. Mr. Fuller, were you putting together some flexibility language there? Did I catch that out of the corner of my eye?
No, Mr. Chairman, I just think that with a piece of information, I mean, there's a statutory charge to the commission, and it's supposed to be doing a number of things. And it's a commission shall continuously evaluate the energy policies of the state. So it has an obligation to do a lot of things just under a statutory charge. It's my understanding what you're proposing is some things that you want them to do specifically to fulfill those duties. So you're saying something to the extent that you move that in addition to any other of its activities, the commission shall do these things, and it's not really so much a work plan, it is the work. I mean, if we adopt this, right, we would do it. We're not going to adopt anything subsequent to that except do this task that you're laying out. Is that correct?
Well, do it or modify it, yes.
I mean, yeah, but as it sits at the time, all right, so I think that clears things up. We do have a ongoing statutory obligation to do a broad range of activities, which we can do inherently. We don't need a rule or proposal to do it. We just need to vote to do something. So that's all I would suggest is just on this proposal, if you want to consider if you're making a formal motion, which I'm not sure you have to do, but if you're doing that, I would say that I would delete adopt a work plan and say moves that the Legislative Energy Commission shall, in addition to any other activities, perform the following tasks. And that simplifies it.
That makes sense to me. I would incorporate that into the motion.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Pomeroy has asked that you repeat that language. Mr. Fuller, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, so it would read, Representative Hilty moves that the Legislative Energy Commission, LEC, shall, in addition to other activities, perform, and then strike the next 18 months, consisting of, and so it would read, Representative Hilty moves that the Legislative Energy Commission, LEC, shall, in addition to other activities, perform the following tasks. And that's it.
Or maybe undertake instead of perform. Since we can only guarantee that we undertake them, we can't actually guarantee the performance. Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad for Mr. Fuller's clarifying remarks, because I thought there was specific obligations we had when we passed this legislation here a while back. I'm grateful for Senator Anderson's comments on, I think, point number two, bringing the federal legislation into our field of vision for discussion also. In the interim here, I've been a busy boy and hearing some folks out on some other issues related to two issues. One's electrical transmission, of course, and another one is transportation fuels. And we've got some serious issues with other governmental bodies throwing up huge roadblocks in the way of what appear to be common sense solutions, to the extent that they're illegal, in some cases even have criminal penalties attached. We should be talking about that here. I know there was an initiative at Minnesota State Mankato a while back on offering kits so for flex fuel vehicles so we could mix and match our own ethanol percentages. Turns out that runs afoul of the EPA, apparently. And that just a couple of things pop right into mind that I think we should be talking about here whenever we're talking about why are we here and what are we doing that can make a difference. Mr. Chairman, you and I have had intense, heartfelt, and civil discussions about whether or not we should be the Legislative Central State Planning Commission or whether we should just be the educational arm that makes all the folks sitting around this table as informed and as intelligent as possible about what's going on so that we can set the stage for the marketplace to react. You know, that's part of the discussion I'd like to have around here. So I hope that I'm glad that Senator Anderson expanded the scope of number two to call into our field of discussion and consideration things that the feds are doing. I'd like to add into some discussion some things maybe that MnDOT is doing, whether advertently or inadvertently, that may be hindering some of our transmission stuff. I know Senator Westrom cares very deeply about that. We need to talk about that in this committee, I would suggest. So I think I'm going to say that I'm rather comfortable for this. If this isn't the only thing we're going to do, if this is a jump start or a kick to get us in the right direction, well, Mr. Chairman, I could be supportive of that, particularly number five, where you actually give us dates way in advance so we can get this on our schedule. Thank you for doing that. However, I have a question about in line two on that last page that has the dates on it. We talk about the Legislative Energy Commission coordinator. Who is that person? What is that about? And have we fixed that problem yet?
That, Representative Beard, is the next item on the agenda.
I thought so, Mr. Chairman. So I just wanted to call out that I actually read this. I saw that. I probably won't be your friend on the other proposal that's coming up in the moment, so I'm wondering that if we adopt this, what have we boxed ourselves into with that that little line in there?
Well, Representative Beard, I actually thought about that, but I think that if we don't have one, that line sort of becomes irrelevant.
Okay.
I don't think it would impede their ability to proceed with the task. I mean, as far as the lack of someone to actually do the work might impede our ability, but I don't think the language here would. Let me see.
Okay.
Senator Brettner.
Mr. Chair, we could probably just delete in addition to the LEC coordinator from this document, and it could still fit in there should we adopt the next piece. I don't have a druther here.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Beard.
Well, now that Senator Brettner Solon brought up, I'm developing a druther. And I would, I'd appreciate if you drop those words out, specifically for the purpose, reason just stated, that if you should prevail, we should hire one. They can certainly do that. They wouldn't be precluded by not having them in this document. And should we decide, if we take those out, that this report does need to be done. I'm sure there are some consultants that we collectively might reach consensus on who could actually help us produce this report and be part of that budget that we're going to approve at some point here. Mr. Chairman, if you need a motion, I would move to strike the words "in addition to the LEC coordinator" on whatever page it is, the page with the dates on it.
Representative Beard, as I said, I think that's kind of a moot point. I would just incorporate that.
All right,
I don't
think
it would require a motion. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to speak on the issue that Representative Beard was talking about and Senator Anderson on the other bodies, I guess, legislative bodies that would be implementing policy and what we should be looking at. And not only in addition to the federal government or maybe MnDOT, but I mentioned in our last meeting, surrounding states. Because our utilities, you know, their territories extend into other states as well, and they deal with the regulations and the policies that those states are trying to implement. And we should be aware of them as we're trying to develop policies here so that we're not setting up things that are now going to be counterproductive. And I think that's really important for us to look at. In addition to the things like with transmission and power generation, if we go to, for example, North Dakota has all the wind, the major wind resource, and they start developing all the windmills there, but we need to put the electricity across our state. I mean, how much of our state has to pick up the costs of transporting North Dakota electricity to Wisconsin, for instance? And, you know, those issues that we should be looking at and discussing at this level if we're going to be at that 10,000-foot level. So I don't know if we need to incorporate that in here, but I certainly wanted to bring that up, that we should be considering those issues as we're going forward.
Senator, I totally agree with that. I think it is kind of implied in some of the language. I'm looking, at the first bullet point under paragraph 4. We're talking about emerging trends, impending problems and uncertainties. I think the things that you just described would certainly fall in that category. Hopefully, we would be mindful of that going forward. I would certainly think we would be. I hope we would.
I hope so.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really support what Senator Dahl said. That's a good suggestion. I also want to ask, is this motion, does that include these dates that are on here? Is that part of the motion? I just have a comment again. Yeah. The two of these dates actually conflict with legislative commissions, longstanding, previously scheduled legislative commissions. And I think just as a matter of policy, we shouldn't schedule meetings in the interim during the same time as other official legislative commissions. Obviously, we're all going to have a lot of conflicts, but that's sort of an official conflict, and I don't think we should do that. I'd appreciate it.
Senator, those specific dates were included simply because in previous discussions that we'd had with a number of members, and certainly with between the co-chairs, we felt that if we establish specific dates, that members could put them on their calendar, weeks or months in advance, so that we didn't have to scramble to find the August 4th every time we wanted to have a meeting. I'm certainly sympathetic to your concern, and if you can think of some way to deal with it, I think it would be good to have some commitment to meetings. If it's not these dates, perhaps we could find some language that would describe how we would go about determining meeting date in each of these months. I think this was Mr. Palmer, this was just like the second Wednesday of every month, or that was the basis for this?
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess you could propose that a meeting should be once every month for the next 5 months, with the exception of possible exception of December, and have the staff do a round robin on. I mean, I just think as a matter of policy, though, certain dates should be excluded, one of them being religious holidays of various religious denominations, and as well as official legislative committees and commissions that are all previously scheduled.
Well, perhaps we could deal with that for the time being, simply by striking the specific days, and just keep the commitment to monthly meetings. And as you said, we can work that out.
Thank you.
It's quite possible that we could find some formula like this was, I believe, the second Wednesday of every month. It's possible we could find some formula that would not conflict in the way that you're describing. So we'll attempt to do that. I'll just eliminate those specific dates for the purpose of this proposal. Is there further discussion? Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if this could be a friendly, agreed upon suggestion, or if I need to offer an amendment, but on number two, that first line after studies, I would like to see the inclusion of comma private sector initiatives, comma, and reports. And just to offer my thought on that, yesterday we were privileged, at least in Rochester, to have Secretary of Energy Chu with us, and the greater community unfolded and brought forward a number of energy-related private sector initiatives that people are out there working on. They hauled them into a specific site, and we could all see them and learn about them. And I thought as I was doing that, wouldn't it be wonderful if this commission had access to what I did yesterday? I just think that there's certainly going to be a lot of happenings in the private sector that we ought to, as well, be cognizant of and be aware of. And I would like to see that, and maybe this goes without mention,
well,
but
Senator,
I would like to see that included in here some fashion, so we have that
Senator,
opportunity.
Senator, I believe that was certainly part of the intent in the various elements that were described in paragraph four. I think that would be a better place to. If you want specific language, I'd be happy to incorporate that. Well, I do think it's implied there. Just in the first two bullet points, for instance. But paragraph two, referring to the studies commissioned by the legislature, I think was more specific. The thought there was that often what happens is that we do ask for reports, and then nobody really follows them up. So that task was more specific. You know, that was intended to simply deal with the question of what happens with this information that we ask for, and you know.
Mr. Chair, as long as it's understood, and what we saw yesterday were university initiatives, private sector initiatives.
Right.
As long as that's somehow implied in number four, and
well,
that's fine with me.
It's certainly my understanding and intent that it would be.
Senator, well, I'm fine with it then, if that's the understanding.
Senator Brettner-Solon, did you? Well, we do have the motion before us. As amended, I think it's generally understood how the report or the proposal has been amended. Is there any further discussion to it? Seeing none, then, all those in favor of the adoption of the proposal, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
No.
Motion prevails. The plan is adopted, which brings us to the third item on the agenda, which is question of hiring staff, specifically a coordinator for the commission. And as with other proposals, we have had a discussion about this, and I think that Senator Pretner Solon and I are in agreement that at some point, hopefully the activities of the commission will be such that we need to hire a coordinator or a lead staff person, an executive director, whatever, to facilitate the activities of the commission. My intention in bringing this forward at this time is that I conceived of this as a sort of extended process in which the first step would be to with working with the LCC to evolve a job description until we do that we can't proceed any further. So what I have presented here is at least a framework for a job description. And what I'm really proposing to do is just get the ball rolling by taking the first step toward the hiring staff, which I think could not occur probably before the beginning of the new year, and I don't see any more immediate necessity than that. But basically what I'm proposing is that we do get that ball rolling by agreeing that subject to a lot of ongoing discussion about specific duties, specific qualifications, and remuneration questions, that we at least agree that we ought to start in that direction. Senator Brednerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree that at some point we are probably going to be active enough that we will require some staff. I don't see us being in that position yet. I think it also is very difficult for us to consider hiring staff when there's a hiring freeze on in the legislature and in the Legislative Coordinating Commission and in the state at this time, that there have been legislative staff that have been laid off, that it's difficult for us to go out and think about hiring somebody new at this time. I do agree that at some point we probably are going to need some staff. I would prefer that we come up with a job description. We have a clear idea of what this function will be and what the duties of this person will be and what the title of the person will be, what the salary of the person will be. And I think that it will be dependent on our budget and what we do establish as our next duties as the Legislative Energy Commission. So I think it's appropriate for us to go ahead and take the first step, establishing a job description for such a position.
Representative Horne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would speak in favor of the Hilty motion and, you know, obviously getting the job description, that's what we're doing now. But I think long-term, we've set a very ambitious agenda here. which I don't think is typical of other commissions. And I just don't see how, you know, this agenda really moves forward or gets implemented without staff. And, you know, there's a lot of commissions here. Senator Dahl and I co-chair the Legislative Commission on Metropolitan Governance, and I'm not saying that that's not an important commission. It is. And we have a lot of work to do there. But I think this is very different than that. And, you know, you look at number four and number two in the previous motion, and this is just a very, very critical and central and urgent issue before the state, and it involves agriculture and transportation and all kinds of different sectors that haven't traditionally been involved. And I just don't see how this ambitious agenda that we have just set out for ourselves in a work plan, the motion we just passed, really moves without, you know, having this additional staffing component. So, you know, let's move forward with the job description, but I hope that we take it the next step as well.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Brittner-Sloan.
Mr. Chair, I do have a question about which motion you have before us. I heard you say you wanted us to prepare a job description for a possible staff position. I didn't hear you proposing this written proposal, and I would like to be clear which one it is you're bringing forward.
Senator, there isn't. I have not made a motion. There's no specific proposal before us at this point other than what I attempted to describe. I recognize that, for instance, one of the things I would suggest in the language that we have before us is I would just delete the reference to posting a job description. I think the first step is to prepare it and bring it before the commission to be discussed and modified as we see fit, basically be approved so that then we could advance as we saw necessary to the next step. So perhaps all we really need to do at this time is ask the executive director of the LCC to prepare a job description for a full-time coordinator to be considered for approval by the commission.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, to that point, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, you know, I mean, I once again, you know, our committee is, or our commission is totally autonomous. So we would not fall under the Legislative Coordinating Commission's hiring freeze, or is that not a consideration?
My understanding, Senator Kubley, is that, and we haven't been able to catch up with the speaker today to verify this, but based on a previous conversation I had, the LCC hiring freeze would probably apply here, except that the chair of the LCC has the ability to waive that, which the current chair of the LCC is Speaker Anderson Kelleher, or Kelleher, Speaker Kelleher, and she's already given an exemption to the freeze for the Lessard Commission.
Okay.
When that body determined that they needed staff in order to carry forward their work. And as I said, I was attempting to verify this today and haven't been able to catch up with the speaker, but in a previous conversation that we had, I believe she indicated to me that if the commission wanted to go in that direction, that she would be amenable to granting that waiver also. And, you know, we should keep in mind that the funding that the commission has available to it is not in any way related to the general fund or any of the other funds that are available to the legislature. What we do with the funding that we have available really, I think, is not doesn't fall in the same category as what was intended in implementing a hiring freeze. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, has anybody searched around through all the different offices and tried to find somebody around here that's already employed by the Senate or the House that could help out and do this job without hiring somebody extra?
We've had a lot of discussions about that, Senator, and I think until we actually evolve a job description, we don't know the answer to that. But also, I think that, you know, if we have a position available and there is a staff member in the, of the House or Senate that wish to apply for the job, they would certainly be considered. Senator Prentner-Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dill, your question is similar to mine, and our staff have been able to keep up with this so far during the interim. The question is, how busy will the legislature even be during the session because of our various demands for our committees and the work that we're doing in the legislature? I think there are a lot of unknowns. I think at the present time, our staff, our current staff, are capable of handling these duties. But if we are to undertake a number of other projects, once those get started, then it may be necessary to hire some staff.
And, Senator, the intent here is to start that process so that if we determine or when we determine that that's necessary, we'll be prepared to do it.
Sounds good to me.
First step here that I'm suggesting that we take.
Okay, let's do the job description. But as I look at the front of the table and I see all the staff up there already, I think they look pretty competent to me.
Yeah. I don't think their competence is in question. I think maybe their stamina might be in question. Senator Prentner-Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, this might be a good time also, though, for us to bring up the whole idea of our budget, because I heard very strongly from the senators that they felt it was very important to get as much information as possible, to get educated around energy issues as much as possible, to be able to bring in expert witnesses, to be able to attend field trips and conferences where you can increase where you can be more immersed in energy issues. And so I think a lot of how we're going to be able to make decisions is we do have a limited budget. So I think we need to set a budget. We need to identify what are our plans, how are we going to move forward, what are our goals, and then how do we decide how much of the budget gets allocated to the various areas. So I think if we come up with a job description, identify how much we need to pay such a position, and identify how much we want to spend on our own research and development, what other activities that the commission will undertake, whether it's studies or whatever, if we have to hire consultants to do some of the studies, I think that will help us then in making some of these decisions in the future.
Representative Beard, did you?
I do. I think I'm on a list there somewhere, Mr. Chair. I suppose preparing the job description for discussion purposes so we can see what the chair actually has in mind could be a useful exercise. I'm not so convinced that it is for a couple of reasons. And one, I'm looking at the schedule here for meetings until session starts again, 2, 4, 5 possibly. A full-time person for a meeting once a month, this strikes me as somebody with a lot of time on her hands looking for something to do. There is an axiom that work expands to fill the time allotted. We have a full-time person sitting around here. My concern as a free market guy and not so fond of government intervention is that we're going to have a government person looking for things for us to do. I would not be comfortable with spending the ratepayers' money on that kind of a position. But if you want to give me a job description so we can have the back and forth over just what it is you have in mind for this person, I suppose we could do that. There would be no harm, no foul there. I would encourage you to think about what a part-time position might be and whether or not there's some other position that we could share, as a senator mentioned just a moment ago. And thinking about while we're in session, trying to think about how this person coordinates with the committee chairs and the committee work that's being done in several committees. Several of the chairs represented around this table are dealing with some of the issues we're going to be educating ourselves about. And finally, I think the money would be better spent making us better legislators. The people that volunteered and have been appointed to this committee care very much, for various reasons, about energy policy and all the other motivations that go with that. I think us, these members, the members here that I serve with, that you've assembled, being educated with on-site field trips that the senator just mentioned. In fact, somebody just forwarded me an editorial from the Fargo Forum yesterday. Fargo, North Dakota, really wants us, this committee, to come to the gasification plant, the Synfuels plant. And apparently there was somebody down here has waved the flag that we don't have any money. Well, apparently that should be one of the things that should be in our budget discussion. We could find some, although they've offered kindly to pay our way to get us there, apparently. So those things are important. They fit my vision of what this commission is about and the influence it can exert on legislation and on this place. But I got to tell you, I'm just a little squirrely about hiring one of my environmental activist friends to be this coordinator and all kinds of mischief that we'll be paying them to do or take us in legislation that could come out of that. I'm going to feel just a little outgunned and a little outnumbered, and we're going to do it with ratepayer money. So I'm not feeling very fondly about even doing the job description at this point.
Well, Representative Beard, let me say that one of the things that I have had in mind from the beginning and very consistently is that what we do not want in a position such as this is someone that brings a clear, well-established point of view that I don't want somebody that's going to come here and advocate for something. I want someone that is capable of bringing some keen analysis and organizational skills and doing the kind of research that hopefully is going on a lot of a lot of our educational institutions across the state and in the country, which we actually do. Honest scientific kinds of research that are not based on preconceived notions and pre-drawn conclusions.
California people are all out there.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beard, I agree with pretty much everything you have to say, except that toward the end there, I don't know that I think we'll be directing whoever we would hire, and I don't know that we would have to worry about any agendas. But I do agree with, like I say, most of what you're saying. I think our staff that we have now, I think, can handle what we have. I think that someone would find a way to fill the time, and we need to give them some direction. With the hiring freeze that we have, even if we have a way to get around it, I don't think that we need to hire someone now or even possibly that soon in the future. We have, I think we should allow our staff to find out what capabilities they have of meeting these needs. And if we get to a point of stretching that to the point where they can't be done properly anymore, then at that point we can move forward. But Mr. Chair, have you made a motion on this yet, move this forward? Or if not, I'd certainly be happy to do so. I don't know if we need to discuss it anymore. And
I don't believe we really do need to discuss it anymore, Senator Dahl. And if you want to, I have not actually made the motion. I have indicated that what I think would be appropriate is to initiate the process. If you want to make a motion,
Make the motion that
entertain it.
That the Legislative Energy Commission direct the executive director of the Legislative Coordinating Commission to prepare a job description for the full-time coordinator for the LEC, and just leave it at that. Be my motion, and then the rest of the description, I guess we can eliminate all that, and the executive director can decide what needs to be put in there.
I wonder, Senator, if in the initial proposal there is a list of contemplated duties that would be included in the job description. Would you be willing to entertain as part of your motion an inclusion of this language saying, among other considerations? But that these be among the duties that are considered in the
Among other things, and eliminate the lines 2 and 3 up there in the front about assisting with the staff and recommend 2 or more candidates. Take that out of this language,
right.
And the and post in the first line. That would be fine. Yeah, I would incorporate that in my motion.
Representative Junkie.
Senator Dahl, you should also incorporate, hopefully, some information back on the possible cost of a coordinator, both full-time and part-time. They could advise us on that, too. So we know exactly what similar salaries would be for coordinators around the state and country, as well as benefit packages, so then we can build that in. Without that, we're still shooting blanks if we're going to build in a coordinator at that time. So if you just put some language in as far as advice on fiscal considerations for that coordinator.
Mr. Chair, I agree with that.
I do as well, Senator. I thought that was kind of implied in the job description. I think it's hard to make a job description that doesn't do that, but if you want to make that specific, I think that would be fine.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if Council has some specific language they can add to that, that's a good idea to have that information. I'd incorporate that into my motion.
Mr. Eloff, do you have some specific language to that effect?
I'm working on
it, Mr. Chair. With the understanding that I think what the intention is clear. Can we just vote on the motion with the provision that staff find adequate language to express the intent of the author?
Mm-hmm. Let's do it. Yes.
Very well, then. We do have that motion before us. Is there further discussion? Representative Westrum.
Okay. I'll defer.
No. Chair.
Senator Sanjum.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to urge a wait-and-see approach to this. We have majority energy staff. We have minority energy staff. We have nonpartisan folks working on energy. Then we take that times two, House and Senate. It would just seem to me that until this commission moves along a bit and understands where it's going and how it's going to get there, that it just seems to me that we ought to be able to get along just fine with the existing staff. And again, at times like this, I'm not sure it's appropriate or wise for government to grow staff. And I'm not sure what the situation certainly is in the House, but certainly in the Senate, we can't add staff, period. So that's the way it is, and it just seems to me inconsistent that we would do it here.
Well, Senator, the proposal is not to add staff. It's simply to evolve a job description so that we can tell whether we, at some point, want to do that or not.
Mr. Chair, I would probably argue that if we were to write a job description and wait a year to implement a staff position or hire a person, it may very well be that job description is not quite what we'd want to be, and we'd have to do it over again. it just seems to me that we're new, we're finding our way, we need a little experience, and we ought to wait.
Well, as far as actually filling the position, I'm not in disagreement, but I don't know how we can know whether we ever want to do it if we don't have this beginning. Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, a few different questions. The conversation has evolved to we want to find out a job description and see if we want to fill it. What has changed from the proposal that we've been given before? In the basis of my question is, if you read that proposal, it's all but a foregone conclusion that there's a process in place, and eventually the co-chairs with a few commission members and staff will bring forth a recommended candidate for the commission to approve. Is that not necessarily a foregone conclusion under this proposal? And it also says full-time position being advertised, and Representative Junkie and others have talked part-time. The language might need to be modified to include that if it was to even pass. I'll stop for those answers.
I believe that was the understanding, Representative Western, but the proposal is simply for the evolution of a job description. There's no implication that we would go forward beyond that. That would be what would be discussed and determined by the commission at the point that we knew what was we thought was a possible position.
So, Mr. Chair, number two on the document I've got,
Representative Western, we're not reviewing
applications.
No, that's not. That has all been dropped in the Dahl.
Okay.
So motion.
Senator Dahl is just dealing with number one.
Yes,
that's correct.
Plus, the inclusion of some of the criteria that are listed at the end of the document, but not going any farther than the evolution of the description.
So, Mr. Chair, does it include part-time after the word full-time, or would it say would it be a friendly amendment to say full or part-time?
I believe that Senator Dahl amended his motion to give the staff the latitude to incorporate in the language the intent that has been discussed here, and I believe it's clear that the intent was to not restrict this to a full-time position, but rather to include whether it would or would not be as part of the consideration.
So, Mr. Chair, just then a comment on the vote. I am not comfortable at this time with us moving forward with a path to add one more staff person. I think in these times, if not for any other reason, and I think Representative Beard hit on some other topics, Senator Prittner-Solon has raised some concerns, and albeit it's utility money and ratepayers that are going to pay this, and it's not a separate general fund tax or coming out of the state's general fund, I don't think the citizens necessarily differentiate that, and I think this is kind of an example of how we just grow government and we never reorganize or cut back. This is a commission that has functioned for 15 years, albeit under a different regime, with using our staff. And you know, during the interim, both when Republicans were in the majority and now you're in the majority, it does seem like we've got talented staff to pull off of if we want to make this a priority. There's there is adequate or certainly adequate talent and several staff people that we can pull off of. And so to be adding a position in these economic times with the deficits we're facing, I just think is really not the direction or the message we want to be sending to the public. I don't think I don't think it demonstrates that we've looked at every other avenue to achieve this. And we all know the ebbs and flows of the legislature. And, you know, a long-term concern I have is the staff person will outlive every one of us sitting around the table, because once it's hired, Mr. Chairman, at some point you may retire. At some point I may retire. Senator Pretner Solem, Senator Senjum, Representative Junkie might be appointed to some bigger position someday, and we won't be here to follow that staff person, and they will be around for as long as government exists. And so I just think this is something we need to give a heightened consideration to, and with these times, I just think we should be trying to find from within what we've done the last 15 years, and maybe it does require reorganizing some of our staff and maybe somebody dedicating more part-time to this. But during session, you know, this staff person is going to probably be having all they can do to get a hold of you or Senator Pretner Solem or us committee members, because we're going to be on the treadmill called the legislative session, and it gets to be a zoo around here. And so the task force or the commission oftentimes finds itself not deliberating or functioning as often as it would in the interim. And then you've got election years and non-election years, and so I think there's a lot for us to take into consideration.
Representative Westrum, let me remind you that all that's being proposed here is that we evolve a job description. If the outcome of that job description evolution is that the commission considers it and says, you know, everything that's being described here as appropriate to this activity is something that's capable of being performed by the staff that we have, then that would be the conclusion that we reached. But until we have some kind of a job description, I don't know how we could even presume to reach that conclusion, unless we want to just assume from the get-go that we know exactly what we have in mind for the commission, which I don't think we do. Well, so, you know, all that's being proposed here is to get far enough with the consideration to be able to make a rational decision about whether it's a good idea or not. You seem to be assuming that it's a foregone conclusion. I assure you that in my mind it is not a foregone conclusion.
Well, Mr. Chair, it might be my skepticism of government, but if you look at history around this place, incremental steps is what breeds government and makes government the only thing on earth that's got an eternal life. And we go down this road, and sure, we take this step today. It's about like go talk to Representative Rukavina in the primary seatbelt discussion that was exempted in 1987, and all we wanted to do is make it a secondary law, and shabam, 20 years later, we've got it on the books, and they've been fighting for that for the last 12 years that I've been here. So I know how this incrementalism works around
this
place.
Representative Westrum, I think you've made your position clear, and we're kind of running out of time here since we have asked the Biobusiness Alliance to give us a description of their work in Destination 2025. And I'm sure Mr. Wallstrom is trying to figure out how he can cut down what he intended to do to what we have in the remaining time.
Very well. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I'll just ask for a roll call vote.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Dahl.
Just to be clear, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, this is, from my standpoint, Representative Westrum, this is to give us that information, I guess. And Representative Junkie's addition, a suggestion on the cost factor, I think, is an important one. It's something that we need to consider. I can state here that, there's no foregone conclusion for me that we need a coordinator. I think it'll still take our vote to move us forward, there's a lot of unanswered questions for me, and I, at this point, feel our staff can certainly handle anything that comes up, even now and probably into the session and the next year. So for the next 18 months or whatever it is that we get to the next election, and I'm not certain that I would vote for a coordinator, even if it come back saying that it's a good idea. But I do think we should have the information, and we should know how much it would cost us to bring someone on board. At some point, as Representative Hornstein pointed out, if we're going to meet this ambitious kind of schedule and agenda, we're probably going to need someone to coordinate a lot of this. But I don't know that it's necessarily understood at this point that we need that, or that we don't have the capabilities in house right now. So I would just like us to have the study or the information at this point, and the executive director probably could use a little something to do as well. So I'm ready.
We do have names on the list if anyone feels the necessity of adding to the discussion. Otherwise, we will just go to a vote. On the motion, on the Dahl motion. Seeing no hands raised. Oh, Representative Knuth, sorry.
Mr. Chair, with the lengthy discussion of how little lot we have to do with respect for members' time, I apologize. It's just that I work with this staff, and they are extremely They're extremely resourceful, they're extremely committed, and they work extremely long hours, particularly at certain times of the year. And I think to assume they can take on certain things or not, as we look at this job description, I think they're capable, they have the skills, but I don't know if we can be fair in asking them to do the amount and quality of work that this commission may eventually lead to. So I'm as a job description is prepared, is there any way of figuring out capabilities of certain staff? And this could be a whole nother discussion, but it's not meant to be in the role of government general discussion. It's a very specific what our current staff is doing and what they have.
I think those capabilities would have to be considered probably after. You can't make a job description to fit the people that you think might be available to do it. I think we want the description first and then see who's available.
Right.
Seeing no further discussion on a roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Beard?
Nay.
Eakin?
Yes.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hilty?
Yes.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Junkie?
Aye.
Knuth?
Yes.
Magnus?
No.
Otremba? Westrum?
No.
Anderson?
Yes.
Chaudhry? Bill?
No.
Dahl?
Yes.
Kubli?
Yes.
Metzen? Pariseau? Kretner Solon?
Yes.
Rosen? Senjum?
No.
Otremba?
There being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails. The Dahl motion is adopted. With that, members, before everyone's patience is tried even further, Mr. Wallstrom. Thank you for your patience. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, many members.
I hope you've had time to figure out how to pare down your presentation that I know would conceivably take up all of the time we have available to the time that we have left.
Mr. Chair, what time do we have left?
We have about 35 minutes.
Okay. Very good. What we will do then is, my name is Dale Wallstrom. I'm the CEO of the BioBusiness Alliance. I want to thank all of you for your support over the last few years to get us off the ground and keep us going. What we're going to do today is try to cover some information with you about what we call Destination 2025. It's a two-year program that we released in January. But before I do that, you have a big pack of information in front of you, a lot more than we intended to give you, actually. But there was a mistake at the printers, and they printed the whole thing instead of just the last three documents, which is what we really wanted to show to you. And we'll kind of go over this when we get to it, but I think I want to just make sure you have this one in front of you, and the rest of it we'll cover when we, very briefly. This is roughly what we're going to cover, but we're going to take out a lot of slides as we go and kind of wing it and watch the clock as we go. What is the BioBusiness Alliance? I think most of you know, so I'm going to cover this very quickly. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're funded partially, about 40% by the legislature, and about 60% from donations and working kind contributions from private sector foundations, etc. We were formed in 2005. We had three phases of revolution. The first one was the assessment, where we published an assessment of the state of Minnesota as it relates to our ability to produce and grow jobs in the area of biosciences. That was published in August of 2006. In January of this year, we completed a two-year study in partnership with Deloitte called Destination 2025, and that's what's in front of you. There are actually 13 documents associated with that, and I'll share with those with you in a minute. And then we are now in phase three. In phase three is implementation, and what we're doing, our organization is doing, is partnering with public, private, and academic groups to implement the recommendations that you will find in the back of each one of those documents, and especially the roadmap, and I'll cover that in a sec. This is an important slide. I think I'd like to talk about it more, but I'll just let it suffice to say this is a picture of what the industry looks like. The six industries that we work on are medical devices through renewable materials. I'd like to see you post this in your office or over your bed or something. You never forget it. The top box represents the private sector, where most companies, most jobs, most economic wealth is created. The bottom three boxes represent what we call community capability, and those are fundamentally the capabilities of a community to compete in a given industry. And they range in everything from at the very bottom, the foundational capabilities, things such as K-12 education, infrastructure, and policies, appropriate policies for the time and the industry. The green box up above represents the academic community, our ability to create new knowledge, because all of these areas are high-knowledge industries, to create new knowledge and turn it into jobs. And then the middle box, a larger middle box, is the commercialization catalyst area. Those are a combination of the private, academic, which is the green box, and public sector. And some of these are partnerships. Some of these are run by the various institutions. This took a year to put together. It was a lot of arguing and debate, similar to what you've just experienced about details. This is a joint agreement between, again, academic, public, and private sector leadership in the state. This is the picture from which we work from all the time, and what we fundamentally try to do, what Destination 2025 is trying to do or is doing, is giving us direction on which industries within our state are we uniquely positioned to grow, what do we have strength, in and infrastructure in place and the ability to expand and take advantage of that in either immediate or near-term job growth as well as long-term job growth. And second, in the bottom three boxes, what areas are we weak in and what areas are we, in some cases, don't have capability that we need to put in place in order to make sure that our state, our community is able to compete long-term. And those are the nature of, that is the nature of what we're doing now in phase three, is leading these kinds of initiatives as we to install or implement. And I want to be clear that we are partnering with many organizations to do that. We have many projects in play, and some of the groups that you hear from today are examples of private sector groups that we're working with to implement some of these projects. I'm not going to go through this. Greg will cover some of it. These are the primary deliverables. Many of you have seen most of these. I would strongly encourage you to go to our website and look at them. Right now we're in implementation mode. Destination 2025, a few points that you have a grasp of what it is. We partnered with Deloitte. Deloitte is it took about 2 years. This is one picture that describes what we did. And to try to be succinct, fundamentally, nobody can predict the future. Therefore, this process called strategic flexibility uses a methodology where you create different scenarios that could become reality. So if you're one who believes that, as an example, that the current economic downturn is a short blip on our horizon, it's going to get over and everything's going to be fine and we'll have a period of economic boom, there's a scenario created around economic boom. If you believe that global warming is not reality and it's not going to happen, there's a scenario for that. If you believe that global warming is real and it's going to have an economic impact on the globe and how we operate, there's a scenario for that. So Deloitte is their process, and what you do then is create these scenarios, and then you begin to move from right to left. And in each scenario, you create an optimal strategy. How would you react as an entity? How would the state of Minnesota react if, in fact, it turns out that economic boom doesn't come reality? How would we react to that? And as you move further to the left, you see those yellow and red and green and blue bars. Those represent components of your strategy or elements of the strategy. And the ones that are like all blue, those are what are called core elements. Those are important because those are elements that doesn't matter what you believe the future will be. They become important in that future anyway. They become part of implementation. So those are things that policymakers or investors can make decisions on pretty quickly and move forward and begin implementation mode. Those are primarily the things that we're working on right now since we released in January. The other colors, the green, yellow, red, et cetera, they represent elements of a strategy that are appropriate to one or more but not all. Those require more study, more tracking, and you try to delay making decisions on those elements as long as you possibly can, because you don't know what the world is going to look like in 5, 10, or 15 years. But you track and monitor. This is the basis of 2025. And I'll let it go at that. So all of our recommendations are based on two things. The drivers that are shaping these elements of the globe as we look to the future. And number two, the strengths of Minnesota and our ability to leverage those strengths to have short-term and long, as well as long-term growth opportunities. We are right now on January 28th, and many of you were at the release, and we appreciate that. We released 2025. We're now in what we call education implementation mode. That'll be 2+ years to get to the point of having those all defined. As we looked at them, most of these are laid out. They group together in two general categories. One is medical technology cluster, and the other what we call the agriculture and biomass cluster. Today we're here. We're only going to talk today about the two white triangles, renewable materials, renewable energy, although you can't ignore food. The food box is, again, an extreme strength of the state of Minnesota. It just turns out, though, we kind of forced food into the agriculture and biomass cluster, but in reality, food fits all industries. As we look to the future, the evolution of the food industry will affect all six of these markets. The colors are an international code. Red represents blood, frankly. If they're blood-borne animals. The reason that's important is anything in this area, the core science and the core technology is basically the same. So you can work an animal and human. It's fine. It works. The down below, the basic, there are basic elements that are consistent. Specifically and most importantly is biomass and the application of biomass either for food, energy, or materials. So there's some core threads that run through all three of those markets that we are focused on. So what did we find? This is probably the most important one, that the greatest shortcoming of the human race is the inability to understand the exponential function. What we mean by that is the exponential function has a typical hockey stick shape to it, meaning that because it's exponential growth, the large growth occurs at the end of whatever cycle you're looking at. This happens to be population. And I might add, I'm going to cover this at warp speed, just to give you a sense of of the kinds of trends that you will find in these documents. These are just two. There are many more, and you can look at them. And if you want more information, call us. This is an example of what the population growth in the U.S. In the world looks like from about 2 to 5 million during the Stone Age until now, and it's a typical hockey stick growth that is typical of exponential growth. So to make the point, I will take a minute to try to create an illustration. This is difficult sometimes for people to understand, but it's so important, and it is that. An example that we found online to illustrate what happens with exponential growth, which in turn in this case means exponential consumption of resources, exponential on both sides of that equation, is an example we found where a person actually did the math to find out if you took, I think it was the Chicago White Sox ball diamond, and you sealed it up and made it waterproof, and you tied somebody to the top bleacher, and you put somebody on so they couldn't get out, and then you put somebody on the pitcher's mound, and you had them every second, they doubled the number of drops of water they dropped on the field. So like second one, they dropped one drop. Second two, they dropped two drops. And third second, they dropped four drops, et cetera. And then continuing to double that number. The question that they ask is how long would it take until the guy tied to the top bleacher was in trouble? And the answer is, normally I ask this question, let you answer it and guess, but I'll give you it today. The answer is 58 minutes, that the ball diamond would be full of water. Second question is the important one. When would they realize they're in trouble? And it's at minute 55. Because it's those last few growth curves that really create the problem. This is what's happening now with the population of growth and the consumption of resources and all the like. Another example is an area of world oil supply. The solid lines in this case represent what known fact, and the dotted lines represent projections. We know that in 1963, oil discovery peaked. We know that an average oil well, this is hard data, average oil well depletes about 40 years after peak. If you accumulate all those, the you would predict that somewhere about now, we would hit peak oil supply, and from this point on, we'll start to deplete wells. This is a consolidation of that data. You can look at this yourself, but these are a group of experts that have published reports. The consensus on when we deplete varies from 2075 to 2150, but the general consensus of when we peak is somewhere between 2008 and 2015. And a lot of the depletion numbers have to do with rate of growth, rate of consumption, et cetera. But the point being, there's not a lot of disagreement around when it's actually going to hit peak. And there's really no disagreement around what happens to the economy of the globe after that happens. It becomes more volatile, and cost of energy gets more volatile. So this sounds depressing. We don't view it as depressing at all. We view it as a great opportunity to create economic wealth, whether your driver is due to environmental reasons or your driver is due to economic growth reasons. It doesn't matter. The opportunities are there, and there are many of them. To try to wrap this up quickly here, the agriculture and biomass cluster is an important one to this committee. The way we view this, just to be clear, is we view the ag and biomass, particularly forests and agricultural products, as being the new source of carbon. And carbon is used, of course, for everything that we're going to talk about today. And there's continually growing demand for new markets on top of the existing markets, and how do you balance those? The reality is we believe that those who would like to see the new markets go away, that's probably not going to happen. Given the drivers that we've identified in 2025, we think the demand for those markets is only going to increase, not decrease, even if there are negative aspects of them. And therefore, we need to find a balance to that. So one of the projects that Greg will talk about is a way to try to manage that. These are the specific recommendations that we made for the biomass cluster in these three markets as of today. These are the five that we are currently implementing right now. One is, and some are well down the road, some are just started, a couple of them, or actually one of them is not started at all yet. Plant engineering is one. We believe the state has to be unbelievably strong in the area of plant engineering, whether the end use is in food or energy or materials. More biomass is required. There will not be enough biomass in the not that distant future. Two, food, as I talked about before, fits all industries. So therefore, having participation in the food industry and understanding how health and all the rest is evolving is happening. We're putting in place a quarterly meeting with the food industry representatives to start to meet with some of the med tech and others. Renewable energy is sustainable biomass management. The issue of how do we keep biomass and optimize our availability of biomass is critical. And then we believe strongly in combustion, and I won't go into that because that'll be covered later. And then the third market is the area of engineering and product production in renewable materials. And we also have a person who will talk about that. So with that, I'll say in your packet, it lists in the bottom of this illustration, it talks about the projects. These slides here talk about the projects that are currently in place to try to beef up our ability down here as a state to compete long term. Funding mechanisms is our most important one right now. It is the most critical issue to our startup companies and to grow companies. Political at that. You all know about Elk Run. That's in the Burrell $1.1 billion fund. There are four more, not as big as that one necessarily, but there are four more projects that are in play around private sector funding to try to develop that kind of capability in our state. This is commercialization catalyst. This one is around enabling knowledge clusters. Again, I'd welcome the opportunity to talk to any of you about these projects because at some point we're going to need your help. And then, of course, on the policy side and the foundational capability, there's a lot that needs to be done there. So with that, I'm going to quit. And I'm going to turn it over to Greg Mast, who will talk about the next phase of this.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. My name is Greg Mast. I'm a Senior Program Manager with the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota. And I plan to address the first of three specific recommendations that were published in the roadmap document as part of the Destination 2025 initiative. The first recommendation in support of uncovering the overlapping and convergent opportunities impacting the food, renewable energy, and renewable materials industries is to establish Minnesota as a leader in sustainable biomass supply. To establish and ensure the sustainability of any type of biomass-based opportunity, it will be imperative that the supply and management of biomass feedstocks is secured and available. However, as with many opportunities, come significant challenges. The perceived scope and importance of the Minnesota biomass value chain is evolving rapidly and becoming more complex while attracting a larger, more diverse group of stakeholders with different ideas regarding strategic issues, some of which are sustainability and security of the feedstock, standards for logistics and infrastructure, scale and speed of production, development capital, transitional costs versus value, and regulatory and legislative harmony. These views and the lack of an integrated understanding of the biomass value chain is making it difficult for stakeholders to effectively communicate, learn, and agree on choices that will produce optimal and equitable benefits, ensuring a sustainable value chain over time. So on this slide, to address these issues and identify trade-offs and mitigate the probability of unintended consequences, the BioBusiness Alliance, in collaboration with additional partners, has begun work on a project entitled Minnesota Biomass Sustainability Value Chain Analysis. The development of this analysis is intended to foster increased communication and interaction between key stakeholders with an interest in the intersection between forest and agricultural biomass management and bioenergy policy, with a specific emphasis on ensuring the sustainability of the biomass value chain. The incorporation of a system dynamics modeling process referenced in the slide will be used to advance statewide dialogue concerning the development and sustainable forest development of sustainable forests and agricultural-based bioenergy opportunities. The BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota has firsthand knowledge, experience, and familiarity with incorporating system dynamics and its powerful methodology and computer simulation modeling technique for framing, understanding, and discussing complex issues and problems. Currently, stakeholders work in isolation using static tools where they typically select narrow value chain boundaries and use widely varying assumptions, evaluation time horizons, and decision criteria. In addition, stakeholders are forced to rely on mental models to perform critical integration and synthesis of static results when attempting to understand broader effects. The resulting proposals are difficult to compare holistically, since they are inconsistent and account for different value chain interactions. Therefore, system dynamics methodology and approach will be useful to achieve a higher level of stakeholder consensus on the policies, investments, and development pace that will lead to valuable, equitable, and sustainable Minnesota biomass value chain. So I'm going to deviate a little bit from my prepared comments just to trying to conserve some time. The way that we view the solid fuel biomass value chain, for example, and how we'll incorporate different elements of that value chain into our modeling work around the ensuring of different trade-offs and ways to evaluate trade-offs that are not only economic in nature, but environmental and obviously community or regionally based regarding economic development strategies. This is just an example of some of the value chain work that we've put together at the organization where, for instance, in step one out of five steps, we look at the pre-harvest and who are the what are the components that are necessary for pre-harvest evaluation, whether that's the customer's end goals and needs, different testing around the assessment of the biomass resource, and production methods and sourcing. Moving to step two, when it comes to the harvesting or collection of various biomass, we have to look at what are the practices involved in that in retrieving that biomass, the different types of species that would be targeted for collection, and also the infrastructure regarding transportation, inspection of the actual biomass. So those folks and those organizations that are involved in that step two process can include independent or contract loggers, equipment manufacturers to identify different types of equipment issues that may arise, different performance guarantees, et cetera, and costs that are inherent to that step. Moving along, step three. So when we look at delivering that biomass to an end-use process or conversion facility, we have to look at different options and opportunities for storage, processing, and packaging. So that opens up opportunities for existing companies manufacturing those types of products, but also emerging or more traditional companies looking to create a new revenue stream where this is an emerging opportunity to participate in the step three process. Step four is distribution. So again, thinking about and giving consideration to the actual product that's created from the biomass, we look at the warehouse spacing, the storage requirements related to its inventory, various distribution channels, who will be delivering the actual product, whether it be a biofuel or a another form of the biomass, and shipping. So just moving on to step five for the actual end use. Again, it comes down to what is the application for the biomass fuel, whether it's a solid fuel, liquid fuel, or a variant potentially being a biochemical. Again, this creates new opportunities for
furnace, burner, and boiler manufacturers, folks to aggregate and or provide the fuel purchase agreements and other ongoing needs, whether it's maintenance, servicing, et cetera, compliance, regulatory, different testing. And the last slide that I'll cover is to just provide a quick glimpse of the renewable materials value chain, of which Brian will be addressing this in just a little bit more detail as well. But what I wanted to really just step through is just to provide you a background as far as what is the reduced biomass feedstock is step one. And the way that our organization described that is the reduced biomass feedstock is the carbon-based molecule that biomass is reduced to before conversion. Step two, the intermediate monomer. This is the simple chemical produced for a base feedstock for diverse chemicals. Moving along to step three, the polymer. This is the monomer reacted into longer strains or more complex molecules. The formulator and compounder step. This is where additives and plasticizers are added to adjust the chemistry of the polymer and add plasticizers to achieve certain final properties. As we move forward to the final product production, this can occur in various forms, including bioplastic extrusion, injection molding, flow molding, or rotational molding. So this provides opportunities in the manufacturing space for more traditional plastics manufacturers looking for utilizing renewable materials in the form of a bioplastic, et cetera. We're seeing an increased appetite in exploring these opportunities, specifically in the area of central Minnesota, of which Dale and some of the other members of our organization are currently hosting some conversations there to help explore what are these possibilities. And so lastly, the distribution step. This is where the product is sold to the market or to a next processor as an intermediate good to a final consumer. And so with that, I think I'm going to leave any more comments. Feel free to track me down afterward. But I wanted to move in and provide Ken Smith an opportunity to speak to a second recommendation that came out of Destination 2025 in the area of combustible biomass and the development of that industry. So, Ken?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commission members. I'm Ken Smith, with District Energy St. Paul, Senior Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. I want to thank you first for your support of the BioBusiness Alliance. It's a very good organization that's doing important work, and they're a good group of people to work through and with. District Energy St. Paul is a 501c3 nonprofit. We've been around since 1983 serving customers. We are North America's largest hot water district energy system, serving over 80% of downtown St. Paul, including this building and the Capitol Complex. And we're an international model. We have people that come from around the world to visit with us to see what we're doing here in St. Paul and how that can be applied in their communities. And that's through this state and others and around the world. Just in the past few weeks, we've hosted Germany, South America. We have a group from Portland coming in a couple of weeks, and we've had two groups from Sweden. They're pretty popular. They come over here quite frequently. If we look at the goals that we have for this state and assessing our goals that we have and where we are against those goals, these are pretty challenging goals. Reduce our energy usage by 15% through 2017. Obtain 25%, and this is statute, 25% of our total energy used in the state from renewable energy sources. And then we have our greenhouse gas goals. What's unclear as we look at this and we assess where we're at in the gap is how we're going to achieve these goals. Achieving these goals, the long-term goals, both the efficiency, the renewable energy, and the greenhouse gas reduction goals are going to require a transformation of our energy system. And current efforts, although there's great current efforts happening in many areas, they're mostly happening in segments, mostly in isolation. And our emphasis remains primarily on electricity. It remains primarily on transportation. And really, there's not much on thermal. I will thank you very much for the thermal language that was passed in the last legislative session. It was a great first step to recognize thermal. And I've had a number of people that have come and told me afterwards in the past few weeks that going through that process, thermal is becoming more a part of the conversation today. So thank you for that word. So we got good efforts, mostly in isolation. We're focused on conservation and buildings, which is very good. We're focused on adding renewables, whether it's solar or wind or biomass. And there's a lot of focus on the transportation or the transmission, which we've heard about.
But this is a very important slide, and I would encourage you to take a look at it. This is the energy system of the United States for electric utilities. It's the energy input and the energy output. Where we are spending most of our time on the renewable side is here as an energy input. We want to increase the amount of renewables. And we're spending time on the conservation, whether it's in industrial, commercial, or residential buildings. Where we're really not spending much time in is in the heart of the system, where two-thirds of the energy is lost is heat. Now, when I share that, people say, well, where does it go? It goes into the atmosphere. It's going into our air. It's going into our rivers. It's going into bodies of water. That energy is being lost. It is enough energy. The U.S. Department of Energy has said it's enough energy to provide all the energy needs of Japan, which is what, second, third largest economy in the world, the entire energy needs of Japan. So today we have a segmented approach. We have an approach where we are generating electricity and we're meeting the needs of our commercial, industrial, and homes, and that's about 33% efficient. And then we have another system that's generating thermal energy needs that's generating about 70% efficient, depending on the boilers. The Department of Energy has estimated somewhere around 45% efficient is what the system is today. Well, there's another way, and that is to use the waste heat that we are generating and utilize that beneficially to meet the heating needs of our buildings, whether it's homes, factories, commercial properties. And we can achieve efficiencies that are greater than 75%, 80%, even higher depending upon the heat recovery technology that is used. This means less emissions into our environment. This means less greenhouse gas emissions. And it is an approach that is proven technology that can be implemented today. So by utilizing combined heat and power, whether regardless of the fuel source, if it's biomass, whether it is biogas, it is a way that we can efficiently meet our thermal and electricity needs of our state. And it is fuel flexible. And it's a proven and it's an available technology that can be used today. We don't have to do a bunch of R&D. This is something we can do today. And we'll increase our energy security because by using that waste heat, we then can eliminate, we can reduce the amount of energy we're using to generate that thermal energy today in a separate system. And then it helps us go towards our greenhouse gas emission goals. I'm going to slip over next slide based on time to this slide here. Integrated solutions. This represents the heat sources for district heating in European Union, 27 countries. This is significant. As I said, District Energy St. Paul is the largest hot water district energy system in North America. This represents about 2,200 times the system that we have in St. Paul. That's the amount of energy that's here. You will see that the primary source of energy is recovered recycled heat. Then the next is biomass is the next piece, the shaded area. Then renewables, geothermal, solar. Fossil fuels is at the very top. It's the smallest amount. 86% of the energy to district heating in Europe is coming from recycled and renewables because they have an integrated approach to heat, thermal energy, and electricity. I'd like to point to Sweden as well. So this is drilling down a little bit. Sweden, to give you a sense, one of my coworkers is here. She loves it when I say this. Sweden is about the same size as Minnesota and Wisconsin combined in land mass and population. And if you visited it, it looks a lot like Minnesota. I can see why many Swedes visited here and stayed here, including my some of my relatives. So as a country, in 1980, at the end of the second energy crisis, they were over 90% dependent upon oil for their energy needs. By 1995, they had moved from 90% dependent on oil to under 20%, more like 15%. If you look at it today, their fossil fuel usage is about 17% for the district heating systems in Sweden. The primary source of energy is biomass by a large share. waste heat recovery is that top blue bar, heat pumps or geothermal, as we tend to use it around here, is also a part of that solution. And they have moved there rather quickly. In 15 years, they were able to move quite substantially. This represents about 160 times the system we have in St. Paul, 160 times in the size of the country of Sweden that implemented, which would be the same as Minnesota and Wisconsin combined. We have many options to integrate solutions here, whether it's biomass for thermal, for combined heat and power. And I would encourage you that if on around biomass, it's either for thermal only or it's for combined heat and power. It should not be used for electric generation only, because you end up with the same efficiencies that we showed in the graph. About two-thirds is going to go to waste heat. Whether it's biogas, solar, or residuals from forestry and agriculture, all of these are potentials that we have in this state. I'm going to leave you with this in the interest of time. I won't go into a lot of it. You have our annual report that we just put out here recently, and this is inside the annual report. We see the integration of energy is really important to our future. And whether you're integrating a variety of renewables, biomass is going to be an important part of that in the state of Minnesota. We have it. We can use it. It needs to be done sustainably through planning. That's very important. Heat recovery from electric generation from industry can be implemented into this. But by having a thermal energy industry and by using this and integrating the electric and these other solutions in with the thermal, we're able to achieve much greater results than working in segments. And I would be glad to talk to any of you about that. You mentioned taking field trips. We're close by. I would encourage you to come visit with us. We can show you what we do at District Energy St. Paul and any questions you have at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Tachman, can you give us what you wanted to tell us in about 30 seconds, because we're we are out of time.
I'll just skip to the good stuff. We're a startup company. We're 2.5 years old. We make chemicals and plastics from biomass. Venture capital backed, and have had a lot of support from the BioBusiness Alliance as well as the Department of Employment and Economic Development and the Office of Energy Security. Here's what we do. We take the 7% of every barrel of oil that goes into the chemicals industry and look to displace it. With our renewable feedstocks coming from biomass sources, the chemicals industry globally is $2 trillion. Three-quarters of that comes from carbon. If it comes from carbon, you can replace it with biomass. And so that we intend to do that with up to a third of it. These are the kind of markets that we're looking to do. These are everyday items in the industrial chemicals business. Each one of these bubbles is a multi-billion dollar market. And Sagetis thinks that we have technology that's relevant to all of them. Here's a little snapshot of our development. We came from our founding couples was in the General Mills Research Lab on Hennepin in 2006. At this point in time, we have a working factory with 35 employees. And we're looking to grow. This is what we're looking for from the state as we come to this group of stakeholders. R&D investment to help young companies get started. Producer tax credits to equal the playing field against the giants like Exxon. Favorable economics for us to site plants here in the state. That includes everything in terms of normal business development and incentives. When you're the first facility, it's always harder for a bank to understand what that means in terms of technology and security. So we're looking for loan guarantees from the federal government. We'd like the state to be supportive of that. And then finally, at the federal level, as everybody's been following with cap and trade, as carbon gets a price on it, that really pushes the dial towards looking at biosources to develop new businesses. And finally, all of that, if we're successful, we'll attract new talent to the state. Here's the value propositions of why we think we're a compelling business model, and I'll just stand back here, and if you have questions, come and talk to me. So, I would love to come back and have more than 30 seconds the next time.
Mr. Chair.
Excellent job, Mr. Tachman. Thank you, and I apologize. Mr. Wallstrom.
Yes, I'd like to wrap up. These two industries, the biomass application, the integrated heating or integrated energy systems, and the renewable materials are two industries that we picked because they have tremendous opportunity right now for the state. It's not like This is something that where there's tremendous invention left. There's tremendous invention will occur, but there's already it's already to the point where the invention's over. It's into implementation. So there are there's job creation possibilities today, and there's tremendous growth opportunities for the future in every community in this state. It's not like one city or one town is going to dominate this. The chemistries that, that Brian talked about, I don't know if you know this, but Minnesota has evolved into kind of the epicenter of that industry creation. It's, in fact, it all starts with Cargill and spins out from that Cargill seed, and now there's, I think it's third-generation companies being formed out of that, and we have the formation of a cluster here that can become a globally dominated cluster if we nurture it and we grow it correctly. Along with that, what they're doing, like what Brian is doing, Brian's company is doing, has the ability to be turned into end products, in end engineering, end engineered product, like I said, in every community in the state. So there's a, we intentionally picked these two because they're here, they're real, and there's tremendous job opportunity immediately. And with that, we'll quit. Thank you.
Mr. Wallstrom, thank you. Gentlemen, if you can stick around for a couple of minutes, members, if you have any questions for any of these presenters, I'm sure they'd be happy to entertain them. And sorry about taking so long today and running over, but these things happen. The meeting is adjourned.